For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Being okay with not being okay. When we're being mindful, we look at the experience of each moment with curiosity and openness, without judgment. That means the unpleasant experiences as well as the pleasant ones. Allowing the discomfort to be present takes courage because it exposes hidden stories and shame. It brings them to light. Personally, I'd rather leave the unpleasant hidden in the dark. I don't really want to have any problems, so the hardest mindfulness practice for me is to apply being okay with not being okay. I've had 60 plus years of experience answering the question, how are you with I'm fine, even when I'm not fine. After my divorce, I was fine, except for the days I was physically sick, probably due to suppressing my unpleasant emotions. And I learned it from my mom, who was the queen of brushing anything unpleasant under the carpet. I'm just a princess at it, but I learned from the best. When anything unpleasant comes up, just ignore it. Distract yourself with a good book or getting busy. I think for most of us, we were never encouraged to experience the unpleasant. Think about that. Is there a time in your life where someone told you, sit with the unpleasant, that it's okay? No, it's take control and see what you can do to fix it. Do whatever you can to avoid anything painful or unpleasant, even if that's telling a white lie or retreating into yourself and becoming lonely or whatever, or seeking some kind of comfort, chocolate, alcohol, shopping, whatever. I like being comfortable, but Steve Armstrong says comfort is not a goal worthy of your effort. And so I've been looking at not feeling okay, and there's four things that I think I've learned about it or observed about it. One is, it's our inner critic that's fueling the bad feeling of not feeling okay, of making you feel like there's something wrong and you got to do something about it. There, you're a bad person if there's something wrong and you don't fix it. Number two, if we ignore it or simply are not aware, we tend to fall into a deep, dark hole. How many times have you just ignored a negative emotion only for it to get stronger and stronger? When you brush it under the carpet, it grows under there till you can no longer ignore it, and you feel like you're in this deep, dark hole that you've got to climb out of. Number three, when we're in that hole, the choices we make often push us deeper in the hole instead of helping us to climb out. We lash out and react instead of taking the time to respond, making a bad situation worse. And number four, we wallow, not allowing ourselves to take in anything good, and so glad that Cheryl was able to take in the good while she's grieving, or not able to accept any help. When we're in that deep, dark hole, there's hands reaching down to help us, and we don't even see them. It's kind of like the toddler having a tantrum because she can't have the toy she wants. She doesn't really need the toy, but she wants that toy, and nothing else is going to make her happy. That's the discomfort of grasping, of holding on to the idea that nothing's going to make you happy until you have this one specific thing that you want. And there could be a lot of other good things going on around you, but you're not going to allow them to make you happy because you can't have your life the way you pictured it at one point in time. It's not going exactly how you want, so you're just not going to be happy. And we don't think of ourselves like a toddler throwing a tantrum when we do that, but that's basically what we're doing. We're grasping onto it has to be this way and only this way, or else I can't be happy. Besides grasping, another type of comfort is aversion. If I push away my discomfort with my unconscious bias, I might get defensive when anyone brings the subject up. So we all have things that we don't like so much about ourselves. You know, I was raised on the south side of Chicago, so I was pretty much raised to be prejudiced, and I've been struggling with it. And I know that I have some unconscious bias, but if I don't look at it, and I have been looking at it recently, but I didn't used to, I would get real irritated, like, why do people have to keep saying things like that? Because I was very defensive, because it was showing something that I didn't like about myself. So aversion is when you're just trying to push things away. You hold on really tightly to your beliefs, even though you feel your body contracting. Do you ever get in an argument and all of a sudden you know you're wrong, but you keep arguing for what you said? And your body is contracting, telling you it's wrong, and you're ignoring it. And more you're realizing you're wrong, but you don't want to admit it. You're holding on even when you're wrong. And then you beat yourself up afterwards for doing that, which just confirms what your inner critic wants you to believe, that you're a bad person. So when we're pushing something away because we don't like it about ourselves, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy that our inner critic's going to say, see, I told you you're a terrible person. And we believe it. And then the third type of discomfort comes from confusion or delusion. I think someone does something to make me angry when in fact they're just having a bad day and their suffering's overflowing. How many times have you reacted to some innocent remark by a spouse or a friend who didn't mean anything negative and you just took it the wrong way and then blow everything up out of proportion? So when we're confused or not seeing clearly, we get a lot of discomfort. Our limbic system is designed to have us resist and avoid discomfort, whether it's physical or emotional, which is good when you go to put your hand on a hot stove and you automatically move away without having to think. But it's not so good on a lot of the emotional stuff. So when we're not feeling okay, our inner critic can kind of help us go from, I don't like this feeling, to I should not have this feeling, to I'm wrong to having this feeling, to I'm bad. And it does it like that. But the aversion to what we don't like actually feeds it. What we resist persists. If we try and push it away or ignore it, it niggles our unconscious. It keeps poking at us and poking at us, and we don't know what that uncomfortable feeling is. It makes us not want to sit down to meditation or not want to sit down to silence, because we know if we sit down to that silence, that whatever it is that's poking at us, it's going to get louder and louder until we finally listen to it. So it takes a lot of our precious energy to keep pushing it away or keeping it hidden. When we resist, our life doesn't go according to our plan. Instead, we need to admit that the unpleasant or painful external situation exists and that we really can't control it. And then that's when we can kind of let it go. When we say, it's here, I don't like it, I don't want it to be here, but it is here. Here's what I can do about it, and here's what I can't do. And admit that we're vulnerable, that we're not all controlling, that we can't take care of everything and make things go the way we want. Chris Germer says, when we struggle with discomfort by obsessing why it happened and what we're going to do about it, we're feeding it. When we turn away in denial, but it lingers in the back of our minds, we're feeding it. Resistance feeds negative emotions. They weaken if we stop regurgitating them in our minds and maintain a mindful, compassionate attitude. He suggests that we go through 5 stages of acceptance, because we've got to learn how to accept that things aren't the way we want them to be. And the first stage is aversion, where we resist, we avoid, or one of my favorites, we ruminate about it. We just don't, we're pushing it away. And if we can realize we're doing that, we could get curious about it and turn toward the discomfort with interest. So how do you do that? Well, when you got irritation on your face, well, right now it's here, but it was over here, and now it's moving here. And just pay attention to how it changes second to second. Not to say, I want to get rid of it, but just what's going on there. And I can only do that for like 3 seconds, but I try. So once you get curious, then you can get tolerating it. You can safely endure it. So that I can say, yeah, it's itching, it's irritating, but it's not going to last forever, so I'm okay. I have no choice but to be okay. There's nothing else I can do. And that's when you start allowing it to be there. It's uncomfortable, I don't like it, but it's there, I'm safe, I'll do what I can, but I'll accept that I can't change this. And so that's when we kind of start to stop changing our spouses and our friends, because we know we just have to allow them to be who they are and decide whether or not we want them to be part of our life based on that. And then he says the last one is friendship, which is embracing and seeing the hidden value. And I keep saying, I'm so glad my face feels like this, because if I didn't find all these precancerous cells, imagine what I'd be going through if they turned cancerous. So we have to look underneath and find the hidden value. What's going to help? So that sometimes the person who's very irritating becomes actually our teacher. Because they teach us to be with discomfort. They teach us to accept what we can, what we can't control. And we do grow through that. So when you start going through this 5 stages of acceptance, there's no need to beat yourself up when you begin with resistance, avoidance, or rumination, because that's a natural reaction. But if you just get on that hamster wheel once you're feeling that, that's where there's a problem. So figuring out, how can I move out of this rumination or avoidance by getting curious? You might ask yourself questions like, what is going on right now? You know, what's going on right now? Someone pushed a button that tripped my trigger. What is going on right now? Is something in the present moment really happening or not? And then looking at what most needs my attention. Somebody said something that upset me. What needs my attention? Maybe I just need to give myself a little self-compassion, put my hand on my chest and say, wow, that really hurt. Or that's very upsetting. Just to say what needs attention. I probably need to, you know, that's why we go vent to other people when someone says something that hurts us, because we want someone to say, wow, that really hurt. But it doesn't really help us when they say it, but it would help us more if we said it. And then what am I believing about this? Did that person really say that to hurt me? Did they wake up in the morning saying, I'm out to get you? Or maybe there's something going on with them and we could get curious about what's going on with them that's making them act like such a jerk. And then focus on where do I feel it in my body? Because I want that to be my bell of mindfulness. So the next time that discomfort comes up, I recognize it right away and I don't jump on that hamster wheel of reactivity. And if you can do that, then you turn and you look at the discomfort, and what you'll find out, what I found out, it's not as scary as it seems. When I turn to look at the discomfort, it's not so scary as I thought it would be. And that's what allows me to tolerate it. So, you know, when I look at my feeling of not being enough, it used to be really scary. I could never, ever look at that. But now that I look at it, I say, oh, okay, there's that story of you're not enough, the one you've been telling yourself for 60-some years. But it's not so scary and it's not so real anymore. A lot of its power is taken away because I'm looking at it. It's a lot more powerful when I'm putting it, keeping it in the dark and hiding it, because it's creating shame then. And shame grows only when it's in the dark. Once you put it to light, the shame kind of fades away. So you ask yourself, can I be with this right now without trying to fix it or change it? So I had these plans for a group and they chose not to go with my plan. Can I just be with that without fixing it or changing anything? Just for a moment. Not for the rest of my life, but just for 2 breaths. And then maybe for 5 breaths. And then maybe for a minute. As long as it's safe, you want to do that. When you can be with it, you quit contracting so much. And when we contract, our world shrinks, our perspective shrinks, and we can only see the storyline. We can only see what we think is wrong, and we don't see the storyline behind it and realize whether or not that storyline is true. It allows us to turn off our limbic system, which is our fight, flight, freeze, and turn on our prefrontal cortex, which is the decision-making part of our brain, so we can make better decisions. It allows the feelings and the emotions to kind of move through you. You might be able to eventually see the unpleasant as a teacher or a guide that's helping you to grow. So how do you increase your tolerance for discomfort? You practice being uncomfortable. I listened to a podcast about persistence and tenacity. And there's a certain part of the brain, which I can't remember how to pronounce. But if you do little sucky things every day, it grows that part of the brain and makes you more persistent and tenacious. So it's dealing with the little discomforts that grow and grow and grow your ability to be with the discomforts. You start by allowing moderate discomfort or unpleasantness. And instead of turning away from it, you turn toward it. I started with an itch on my back, not scratching an itch, which was really hard to do. Or not moving when I was meditating, which at first I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. Why would you ever want to be uncomfortable? But I realized that you had to learn to be with discomfort. And so I did start with an itch or not moving when I had a little discomfort. It doesn't mean sit in meditation in pain, but it means if there's a little discomfort, turn toward it and just look at it. See what it is and realize that, yeah, I can be with things that are unpleasant. I have that skill. And when you look at it, like when you look at an itch, If you think, oh my gosh, there's an itch on the middle of my back and I can't reach it, it gets stronger and stronger because you're resisting it. But if you look at it and say, oh, that's an itch, it came up, and even if I don't do anything, eventually it's going to go away. And I just watch it get softer or change the sensations. Eventually it goes away all by itself. And you realize, I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to be with it. So the message here is the only way to ease our discomfort is to experience it fully. You have to stay with uneasiness, stay with the tightening, stay with the itch. And once we learn we can be with discomfort, we can quit resisting it. That's that first stage, is resisting. When we ignore the unpleasant by brushing it under the carpet, it grows until we can no longer ignore it. And so when we push it away, it gets stronger. But if we look at it, it gets weaker. Chris Germer says, fighting what we're uneasy about only makes things worse. Fighting what we're uneasy about only makes things worse. The more we can accept the anxiety, physical discomfort, sleeplessness, and pain of disconnection, and the self-doubt that goes along with it, the better off we'll be. So our discomfort zone is where we learn, where we meet our edge. And Dan Siegel talks about a window of tolerance. And inside the window is your comfort zone. In the windowsill is your area of growth. That's where you can be with discomfort. But outside of that windowsill is your overwhelm zone. And if you jump right out to the overwhelm zone, you're going to just be overwhelmed. You're not going to learn, and you're probably going to traumatize yourself. So you start with the discomfort zone, where you meet your edge and push it. Because if you don't, your window of tolerance over time shrinks. Think about some of the older people you know whose lives are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking because they haven't been learning and growing and pushing themselves. And they, you know, especially in the pandemic, how many stayed in and then never came back out? Ursa Beta says, admittedly, it's difficult to maintain awareness in the present moment when distress is present, because to truly experience the present as it is means we have to refrain from our most habitual defenses, such as justifying, trying to get control, going numb, seeking diversions, and so on. The sole purpose of these strategies is to protect us from feeling the pain we don't want to feel. But until we can refrain from these defenses and feel the physical experience directly, we will stay stuck in the storyline of me, unaware of what life really is in the moment. So to be with discomfort, we really have to establish a new relationship with our thoughts and our feelings. Rather than pushing them away or ignoring them, we just have to look at them without trying to change them or fix them. Carl Rogers said, the curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. And that's definitely not easy to do. But we have a tool to help us, and that's meditation. When we practice meditation, we train ourselves to look at what's happening in the moment without the filters of greed, wanting, aversion, or delusion. And when we're aware of the emotions arising, we can choose to get lost in the storyline, push it away, ignore it, or maybe we'll be wise and just hold it gently. Holding it gently requires us to feel the pain. And sometimes that pain is a lot less than we thought it would be. We can be with our pain and let it move through us, knowing it won't last forever. Neuroscientist Jill Bolte-Taylor notes that the physiological lifespan of an emotion in the body and the brain is 90 seconds. That is, if we don't fuel it with our storyline. So if we turn toward it and look at it and don't fuel it with the storyline, it could be gone in 90 seconds. But it's going to take a lot of practice to not fuel it with the storyline, because we've been doing that for so many years. But holding the pain is a very uncomfortable place for us. We're not following our habit energies to get rid of the pain, so we're left with an uncomfortable feeling. We don't know what will happen, and our inner critic is warning us of disaster. It's easy to hold on to it, the pain. This is my pain. This is my problem. I'm the one with it. As opposed to looking more at common humanity, this is a pain that humans have been dealing with for centuries. So I've been trying to look at the pain that I've been holding on to for the last few years and trying to hold it gently, but for a long time it was still my pain. I tried, felt like it would never ever go away. But the more I looked at it and the more I held it gently, the less scary it was, and the more I could see the stories underneath that really were just bullshit. You know, they're just made up stories that encouraged me to feel this pain. So one of the things that helped me was a practice. It's called Tonglen in Buddhist services. It's basically letting in the pain of everyone who's suffering that same pain. So when I was dealing with the pain of feeling rejected, I think I've all told you the story about in seventh grade being rejected. I felt I was the only one, and that was my pain, and that hurt, and nobody else had to go through with what I went through. But when I started letting in the pain of all the middle school girls who've been rejected, which there's probably 99.9% of them, and letting their pain be there, all of a sudden it was easier. Instead of feeling totally overwhelmed with pain, I just felt like I wasn't alone. And when we feel the pain and we think it's my pain, then we disconnect and we feel alone. And that's kind of like the second arrow. The pain itself is bad enough, but then we do something else to make it worse. So instead of coming out of that deep hole, we're digging ourselves deeper. So when I looked at the pain of everyone, the pain wasn't so much mine, and I could loosen the grip. Made a lot of sense to me. Frank Ostashevsky said he was not very good at self-compassion. He runs a hospice at the San Francisco Zen Center. But when he lets compassion arise for all the people suffering like he is, some of it spills over onto him. So he found that the way to grow your self-compassion and to learn to deal with your pain is to be compassionate toward other people. And I think that's what's been happening to me as I go into the prisons and just talking with people and so on. Now that I can help to hold their pain, it makes it easier for me to hold pain that I have. I'm starting to accept life won't always go according to my plan. And I was a project manager in my career, so that's really hard to not have things go to my plan and my timeline that I've dealt out. And I've learned that I don't have to make myself unhappy when life doesn't go according to plan. That I can still enjoy the present moment even when it's not the moment that I had planned. So Rick Hansen suggests that this week take a stand for yourself, for feeling as good as you reasonably can. A stand for bearing painful experiences when they walk through the door. A stand for encouraging them to keep on walking all the way out of your mind. This is not being at war with discomfort or distress, which would just add negativity, like trying to put out a fire with gasoline. Instead, it's being kind to yourself, wise and realistic about the toxic effects of a painful experience. And to end, I'd like to use a quote from Richard Rohr. We do not think ourselves into new ways of living. We live ourselves into new ways of thinking.